From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
When it comes to Kuskokwim River salmon, the only thing the federal government and the state of Alaska seem to agree on is there's a lot at stake in a legal battle over rural priority for subsistence. KNBA's Rhonda McBride talked with Representative Mary Peltola about the lawsuit the federal government has filed against the state of Alaska and its impact on salmon management.
Representative Mary Peltola says cooperation is always in the best interest of salmon, and a lawsuit the federal government has filed against the state shows the failure of both agencies to find common ground.
And not worry so much about whose jurisdiction it is and who has the final say. So I think all fisheries management should be collaborative between managers and stakeholders.
But 10 years ago, after a series of failed salmon runs, the federal government took over management of about 200 miles of the lower Kuskokwim, the part that runs through federal land. Another 500 miles remains under state control. Federal managers claim jurisdiction under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, which gives it authority to manage subsistence for a rural priority in times of shortage. But when federal managers clashed with the state over regulations 3 summers ago, it filed a lawsuit against the state. The state, though, claims that federal management has interfered with its responsibility to make sure enough salmon reached their spawning grounds. But Peltola doesn't believe that's entirely true.
One of the flaws that I see in the state's argument is that the state of Alaska Department of Fish and Game statewide, they meet their Chinook escapement goals between 50 and 60% of the time, which is an F.
Peltola says that once federal managers and tribes began to co-manage the lower river in 2015, escapement goals were met, which allowed enough salmon to reach their spawning grounds. She says that the state has repeatedly tried to lower that target, which both the tribes and federal managers oppose.
We understand the importance of eggs in the gravel, and people understand that we don't have abundance. We used to see 6 returning fish for every fish that spawned. Now we see less than 1 returning fish for every fish that spawns.
Peltola does have a dog in this fight. Before she ran for Congress, she was head of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. She believes co-management combined the best of traditional knowledge and Western science, and in the best of all possible worlds, the state would be an important partner given its expertise and the vast body of research on the fishery it's amassed over the decades. But Peltola doesn't believe the current state administration wants to collaborate.
So I think it's really just political.
But State Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang says the Intertribal Fish Commission hasn't always been easy to work with, and both groups interpret data differently. But most important of all, he says the state has a responsibility to defend itself against federal overreach.
ANILCA is pretty clear. The federal government has a right when the state opens up a fishery to further restrict that fishery. That's not what's happening in the lower Kuskokwim River. They are opening the fisheries. They are closing other uses. They are completely supplanting state management with federal management.
Vincent Lang says he doesn't think ANILCA ever envisioned a complete replacement of federal management on the river. The commissioner says the lawsuit forced the state to defend its authority under the Statehood Act and the state constitution.
Once we got sued, we had no choice but to defend our authorities and responsibilities.
The commissioner says whatever happens in court, the state will continue to do its part in providing federal managers the necessary research and data it will need to do its job. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Every year, Petersburg High School students vie for the chance to take an aquaculture class, where they learn about fish that sustain the local seafood economy. And they do that by raising and releasing salmon into the wild themselves. KFSK's Shelby Herbert followed the class over the last year and brings us this story.
About a dozen students are peeking over the sides of two enormous tanks at Petersburg's water treatment facility in May. The air is thick with the smell of mud and algae from the pond water gurgling through the tanks, and the slight odor of fish. Hundreds of pink salmon fry, just about the size of a child's finger, are darting around the murky water. The teens are tasked with gently catching all of them with tiny nets and plopping them into several 5-gallon buckets of water nearby. It's a painstaking process.
I mean, they're choosing to do this, Andrew. It's not my fault.
It takes them about an hour. Some of the fish are dead, or rapidly approaching death. Once they've collected all the fish they've raised over the last year, the students load up their buckets onto a school bus. Alice Kumps is a science teacher at Petersburg High School, and she's taught the aquaculture class for close to a decade. She drives the students to a creek a couple miles out of town. When they arrive, she leads them through the woods to a shallow eddy. The students begin trying to coax the fish out of the buckets and into the stream, which they have explicit permission from the local Alaska Department of Fish and Game Office to do. But while they wade through the mud and try to dodge the Devil's Club crowding the creek, some of them are struggling with the task at hand.
Don't put your hand on the dead wood as a brace.
Honestly, I don't know. Ooh. I'm just letting them go with the flow at this point. Be free, children.
Despite their objections today, it's a massively popular class. Kump says a lot of kids compete for spots in her aquaculture course every year.
I unfortunately am restricted in keeping my number down to 14, but yeah, I've got a lot of kids that want to take it because it is so hands-on.
But Kump says the class isn't just about field trips and messy fun outside. It's preparing them for the real deal. Careers in the fishing industry after graduation. Through the high school's partnership with the University of Alaska Southeast, students can earn technical education credits for the class alongside standard high school credits.
It's a great class for kids that might be thinking about doing this as a career. And the idea really is that students might decide to go to a technical school, preferably in the state of Alaska, and continue their education, and then they could work at a hatchery.
Charlotte Martin is a senior this year at Petersburg High School. Last spring at the creek, she said she wasn't sure about what she'll do when she graduates, but she's enjoyed the hands-on learning experience in Kumps's outdoor classroom. Martin says it was rewarding to see the pinks transition through their earliest stages of life, but it's hard not to get a little attached.
I mean, yeah, we saw them when they were eggs till now, so kind of attached to them.
Absolutely. How did this moment feel? They're going upstream, they're going to feed people and bears, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I'm happy for them. It's kind of cute.
A new crop of pink salmon hatched last month in Kumps's classroom. The tiny fish are still attached to bright orange yolk sacs, which they'll absorb over the next couple months. In this second stage of life, they're called Alvin.
Today was our first day, actually, that we found some that have hatched. So we have a few little Alvin, which is exciting. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the kids were excited.
The pinks will be ready for release in late spring. That's also right around the time Charlotte Martin and her cohort will graduate high school and start their own journey into the great wide world. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
When the North Pacific Fishery Management Council implemented the Catch Share program known as crab rationalization for Bering Sea snow and red king crab species in 2005, it included a 3% share for qualifying skippers known as sea shares. During the development of crab rationalization, which permanently privatized access to the fishery, the exclusion of working fishermen was questioned by passionate testimony to the council and even protesters waving signs outside. The council was able to successfully ignore the existence of deckhands due to the fact that absolutely no one keeps track of them. But skippers sign a document called a fish ticket, which is required upon the sale of a regulated species. Therefore, they were officially documented and tougher to ignore. So the council carved a thin 3% slice of pie for skippers to share amongst themselves. In doing so, they implicitly recognized the stakeholder status of working fishermen who catch the crab, not just those who own the equipment. But they added a very telling provision to sea shares, a catch, so to speak. To continue to hold sea shares, a fisherman had to keep fishing, to be actively invested in the fishery by way of effort and risk. No such requirement was applied to boat owners, who received remarkably unencumbered access rights, ones that required no active participation or investment, and allowing for consolidation of the rights inside cooperatives, giving them powerful leverage to demand high lease fees on working fishermen. So the council identified two very different kinds of stakeholders. By requiring active participation to hold sea shares, the council was trying to compel sea share holders to relinquish them when they stop fishing. In this way, new active participants can acquire them and their benefits. So the council sees working fishermen as a class, not as individuals. Sea shares were intended to benefit working fishermen consistently over time, with those benefits passing down to the next generation, whoever they may be. In sharp contrast, the remaining 97% of the access rights were permanently awarded to a focused group of boat owners who had steel on the water 20 years ago. They were not treated as part of a continuum of boat owners, one that would see the benefits of the program passed on to a new generation of boat owners as the old guard retires. Without the requirement of any investment or participation in the industry, owners of crab quota share became its permanent gatekeepers, able to set lease rates of 50% or more to let down the drawbridge for working fishermen to access the resource. Rather than a bridge to the future, the program created a paywall. Then, in a puff of irony, last year notices were sent out to 19 Bering Sea crab fishermen that their sea shares had been revoked for lack of use. COVID restrictions combined with crab crashes have made it tough for even the most diligent crabber to remain active in the fishery. Recognizing this, the council will consider relaxing or removing participation requirements for sea shares with one of two alternative modifications. Alternative 2 would modify the requirements to make them easier to fulfill. And Alternative 3 would simply remove participation requirements altogether for sea share holders. This would seem to take away the opportunity for new entrants to acquire sea shares, but I guess it was good for the goose.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.